For years, my son John and I had a tradition of going to the Chicago Chop House for his birthday. Any of you eaten in the Chop House in Chicago on Ohio Street? Well, of course, Sue, you have. But go there sometime. You know, for years, the Chicago Chop House has been rated in the top 10 of steak restaurants in the United States. And so one year, John wanted to invite his best friend, Dane. They had been friends since elementary school. Now they were juniors in high school, so I said, okay, he can come along, but one condition, that he be dressed appropriately. Okay. Well, we picked Dane up, and I was impressed. He was wearing a sharp suit. The colorful tie looked good. His hair was another matter. He wore it long, and that wasn't the problem. The problem was that he had 10-inch pointed spiked horns sticking out of his head. He used a combination of hair gel, wax pomade, and glue to get it to look like that. This is what he looked like. Now that is not Dane. I didn't take a picture that night, but you get the idea. Only he had a lot more of those on his head. And he gets into the car and he says, "Well, Dave, old buddy, what do you think?" I said, "I think we're not going to make it through the front door of the restaurant." And the boy scoffed. "Oh, that's no problem." I said, "Look, I'm not driving all the way to Chicago to be turned away at the door because Dane looks like Medusa." And my son replied, "Dad, just relax. The hair's no problem." "So I'll tell you what," I said, "if I'm wrong, I will let you order a 20-ounce bone-in New York strip, but if you're wrong, John goes in the Chop House with me, and you, Mr. Dane, will go across the street and spend the evening at the Hard Rock Cafe at your own expense. Deal?" "Deal." So we arrived at the Chop House, and we were greeted by the maitre d'. And she stood there taking a long look at Dane. And I said, "Here it comes. She's going to say, I'm sorry, but we have a dress policy here." But no. That's not what she said. She said, "That's really cool hair. Follow me." And so she took us to the third floor and seated us in the middle of the dining area. And I watched as we were going through, and heads were turning. And some were smiling, some were, "Boy, look at that." And I sat there feeling more self-conscious than I have ever felt. I was sure that people would say, "What kind of a father would let his son come into a nice place like this looking like that?" Wrong. For the next 2.5 hours, people would walk up to our table and say, "Can I touch it?" I said, "Boy, you could put an eye out with one of those things. How did you do it?" And I was getting more and more steamed in the process. The servers would come by and soft voices would say, "Nice, looking good. Perking up the place." It was snowing when we left, and all the way to the car, those teenagers mocked me mercilessly. "We told you the hair wouldn't matter. Lighten up, Dad." See, all the way from Elkhart to Chicago, I was dwelling on Dane's hair. But on the way from Chicago back to Elkhart, I said, okay, maybe we need to do a little self-assessment. And then I realized that Dane's hair was not the big deal. The big deal was that I made a big deal out of something that really didn't matter. I mean, all the way up there, they were enjoying the ride and having these wonderful conversations and goading me. We're going to get in, even though I look like a cartoon character. Oh. You know, we get amped up and stressed out over things that don't amount to much at all. And unfortunately, we don't realize it until it's too late. In our text from Luke, the religious leaders are trying once again to deal with their Jesus problem. On three previous occasions, they have tried to paint him into a corner, only to find themselves painted in. After he had cleansed the temple, Luke says they did not find anything they could do, for all the people were spellbound by what they heard. Next, Jesus told a parable, and Luke says when the scribes and chief priests heard the parable, they knew that it was against them, and they wanted to lay hands on him in that very hour, but they were afraid because of the people. On the third time, they set him up with a question from which there was no escape. He would be in trouble either way. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And he didn't answer that question. And Luke says, and they were not able in the presence of the people to trap him by what they said. And being amazed by his answer, they all became silent. And our text this morning is round four. This time it's the Sadducees' turn to paint him into a corner, and they were doing it with the question about marriage and the resurrection. If a man died and he had no children, it's the responsibility of the brother to marry the widow and have children so the deceased brother's name would continue. It was a practice called levirate marriage. And so the Sadducees say, okay, let me ask you this. Suppose that seven brothers died and had no children. Say the first brother dies, his next brother marries, no children. He kicks the bucket, the next brother dies, no children. You get the picture. Now you would have thought that after maybe about the third or fourth brothers, the remaining brothers would have seen a pattern. I just preached a chapel service at Timbercrest when this little lady came through the line and said, I'd like to talk with you about something in my apartment. I had no idea who she was, so I went over and said, yeah, well, what's up? She said, my name is Evelyn Yaney. And some of you will recognize that she was a long, long time member of this congregation. She said, back in the 80s, I asked Jim Eshelman if he would conduct my funeral, and he said yes, but he died. So I asked Glenn Mulligan, would you do my funeral? And he said yes, and he died. And after a pregnant pause, I said, I'm not sure I like where this is going. To which she laughed. I said, I'll tell you what, let me update my will, make sure the last arrangements are all taken care of, and then I will do your funeral. At the time, she was 102 years old. She died almost a year to the date from the time we had that conversation. The widow went through all seven brothers, all dead, no kids, now the widow dies. And in the resurrection, the Sadducees said to Jesus, whose wife will she be? Thinking they had just folded him up into a pretzel. Now, the example was way over the top, a bunch of contrived malarkey, because first of all, the Sadducees did not even believe in the resurrection. And so they hear asking questions about the resurrection. And, you know, I'm thinking about this. Why seven brothers? I mean, couldn't the point have been made with two or three? Do you have to polish off seven of them? Unless Luke was just wanting to insert a nice biblical number seven into it. And as slippery Jesus usually did, he didn't answer the Sadducees' question. And he said, who says there's marriage in heaven? Now, in this life, marriage has been around for a long, long time. It's through marriage and that the wonder of that relationship that we find intimacy and love and security. And yes, in that case, children to help around the house. But then Jesus said, that's a stupid question. Because those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage. But those who are worthy of the next age will not marry, nor will they be given in marriage. Now, a lot of us hear that and we get a knot in the stomach. Because we've heard it all of our lives. We know that when someone dies, we say they're going to be reunited with their families. They're going over to the other side and there they will meet their spouse. Now, does this wipe that idea out? No, not at all. Because Jesus always taught that on that other side there is going to be a reunion, but not in a way that we understand it. Yes, we will see the people we have known and loved. We will be reunited, but it's going to be something very different because relationships in heaven have no adequate human analogy. It is absolutely unlike anything that we could ever imagine because all we'll need is God. And everyone will be a child of God. And so don't make a big deal, Jesus was saying, out of such a puny question. And like the three times before, Luke said, and some of the scribes answered, Teacher, you have spoken well. For they no longer dared to ask him another question. And so I ask you today, what is the question? Well, Jesus gave a twofold answer to the question. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one, you know it, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second one is like unto it, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Quit making a puny fuss out of your questions about the resurrection, which you do not believe in, because it is not about who is married to whom in heaven, because there are bigger matters to deal with. And for us in this realm, it all comes down to our love of God and our love of neighbor. Now, this is a quote worth copying. A guy named Richard Carlson said that stress is nothing more than a socially acceptable form of mental illness. Chew on that one a while. Let me say it again. Stress is nothing more than a socially acceptable form of mental illness. We are distressed from our attraction to things that are insignificant, that don't really matter at all. The anger that is so prevalent today, and the rage and the violence and the anxiousness of all of that grips us. The callousness of the ways that people treat other human beings is beyond imagining. It all stems from wanting the wrong things. Stems from our addiction to money and possessions and the things which debase us. Because you see, stress breeds stress. We all know that. You get on this cycle and down the tubes you go. Stress breeds stress. And greed breeds greed, and hate breeds hate. I want you to listen closely to this poem. This is the age of the half-read page and the quick hash and the mad dash, the bright night with nerves tight, the plane hop with a brief stop, the lamp tan in a short span, the big shot in a good shot, and the brain stress, the brain strain and the heart pain, and the cat naps while the spring naps, and all the fun's gone. It's done. Again, think about it. All of these things that we do, we think that really matter, it doesn't. And this poem is as contemporary as can be. It was written in 1949. But it fits all the more today. What was true then is true now. Catholic priest Ronald Rolfheiser said, "Our deep hungers are being stifled, and we are suffering the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable as we are learning in this life that there is no finished symphony. In this life, there's no end to our wanting. There's no end to our reaching and grasping and hoarding. Because it says there is something more." When I met Emerson Butterball, now how's that for a classy name? When I met Emerson, he was probably 80 years old. It was the first Sunday of my intern year at the Crest Manor Church of the Brethren. It was the first time I had ever led worship, and I was wound tight. And after the service, as people came through the receiving line, I was getting all these warm welcomes. "Glad to have you here. Look forward to working with you." And here comes Emerson. I looked at his body language and I said, "Uh-oh." Now, that day, my rather svelte figure in those days was adorned in a three-piece black suit. And I had, in style with the time, the leisure shirts, guys, this leisure dress shirt with the collars kind of out to here. And Emerson comes up and he looks me in the eye and he said, "My father was a Brethren pastor. And in all my years in the church, I have never seen a pastor up front without a tie." And I thought, well, I could offer a history lesson to say, "Well, Emerson, when your father was a pastor, Brethren men weren't allowed to wear ties." But we probably had forgotten about it. I just said, "Thank you for sharing." My hang-up with punk hair was Emerson's hang-up with neckties in abstentia. Yeah, I hope I am never asked to officiate at a wedding where a wedding planner is involved. I mean, the bride and the mother are hard enough to deal with. Please, don't throw in a wedding planner, because you know how it is. Some brides and their moms want everything perfectly choreographed, just like the wedding they saw on The Bachelorette down at the beach and the sunset, all that crap. They want everything to go just so, and the dress and the suits and the flowers and the flower children and the decoration and the reception mints all have to coordinate. And there's been more than one time trying to get a rehearsal done that I have just wanted to scream, "It doesn't matter! This is a Christian wedding. It is not a coronation." have to tell you, one time I was so beside myself with the mother of the bride who had taken over everything, and I said, you know, somebody needs to be in charge here, right? She said, absolutely. I said, is it going to be you or me? And she went on leading the rehearsal. Too much emphasis on the wrong things. You know, churches spend too much time and energy chasing their tails and keeping things in order and maintaining control and getting worked up over trifling things that don't amount to anything. And see, what happens is authentic Christianity gets buried under layers and layers of traditions and unchallenged attitudes and unbecoming behaviors and spreadsheets and policies and property, rather than giving themselves to those first two commandments, which are the big question, loving God and loving others. We focus on the big things that matter in this world for people who want to live a different way and who want to have peace inside their own skins. Who's married to whom? Oh, our minds can just become dizzy thinking about a question like that. The moaning about how unfair life is. No, doesn't matter. But loving as best we can and looking after and loving our neighbors does. Ties or no ties, socks or no socks, shorts or long pants in worship doesn't matter. Losing ourselves in wonder, love, and praise and giving ourselves to the God upon whom we are dependent for all things, that matters. Missing the second half of the Colts game doesn't matter, especially in this season. But the call of a family member or friend who needs your time does. See, life is short. Time is precious. And if I may quote Shakespeare, we make much ado about nothing. Because when you get right down to it, what matters is loving God and loving and serving Jesus and loving our neighbors. And I'm left with just one question. I wonder what Jesus would say about Dane's hair.